Hello, welcome to another episode of We Are Curious. My name is Ali Mwakaneno Gakweli, your usual host, and today I have with me Felix, who is our in-house analyst. Felix, say hi to the people.
I think we just say the usual co-host would actually be
better. Oh, you think you've been here frequent enough to earn such a title?
I definitely think so, but Ali calls the shots, you know.
Well, just for this show, you know, Felix runs a Bulls, Bears and Whiskey, which is live, by the way. They had quite an interesting discussion on, you know, the developments around Didi and the Chinese regulation, you know, what's happening with the Kenyan shilling and, you know, the loud silence in crypto markets. You should definitely check that out on our HISA platform. It's live already. Felix, just to start out the discussion, what are you curious about this week?
Oh man, a lot of stuff, you know. First of all, curious about markets, curious about the global trends in tech, curious about the business aspect in Africa, curious about Kenyan statistics as well. And I'm also curious generally about when are we having HISA, trading on HISA, you know.
Yeah, but then you see you're with Bossman, you're with the HISA CEO, Eric Asuma, and one of the things that came out in the conversation was
we should expect trading very soon,
and we're going to have beta testing launching in the next few for the 500 users, yeah, isn't it?
Exactly.
And guys, in case you're still wondering what HISA is, well, HISA is literally the coolest trading and information platform by the Kenyan Wall Street. So we're already, our beta version is already live, and you're welcome to access, you know, a host of news from the Kenyan Wall Street and Trading Room, amongst other leading news websites in the country, as well as cool podcasts from the Kenyan Wall Street. Hey, it's not just another portal. We know that you can access the news directly through the website, but then what HISA offers is, you know, a community. So a group of investors that you can engage with, ask questions and get your answers. I know they're not, you know, retail investing is it's, let's just say that it's mysterious, and it's always welcome when you have a community around you that you can ask questions and compare notes, and HISA offers just that. And then, you know what? We're launching HISA 2.0, and HISA 2.0 will offer trading. And hey, when we say trading, we're not just talking about the local stocks in the Nairobi Stock Exchange, you know. We are talking about, you know, stocks listed in Kenya and abroad. And you'll be able to trade in stocks like, you know, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, Tesla. And those are just some of the good things that I can discuss in public. You know, there are some things that I can't share unless they're live. So definitely, in case you don't have the HISA app, download it.
When you say abroad, you know, if you're in Kenya, then Uganda is abroad.
Okay. nice correction. When I say abroad here, I don't mean just Uganda. I am talking about markets in the Northern Hemisphere. I think that's Northern Hemisphere of the globe. So we're talking about US markets. We're talking about the Teslas. We're talking about the Apples. We're talking about Coinbase. We're talking about these companies that you would want to invest in that you still can't in Kenya. You know what? Such things.
Talking about Didi.
We're talking about GameStop.
Yeah.
GameStop. Imagine you've been reading about GameStop all these days. Yeah. You'll be finally able to participate in what you're into and act on, you know, the information that you obtain from this and other websites. Enough of the marketing, Felix.
Yeah.
Felix, we already discussed taxes this weekend. You know, let me tell you a funny story, yeah? Last week, my gas and my cooking oil decided to finish at the same time. So I got to experience the full blow of, you know, the current taxes. Because, you know what? Just moving away from that. This week, there's something that we would really, really like to, you know, delve into the discussion today. And that thing is the cost of starting a business in Africa. I know this is not our usual take. So usually, in case you've been in this discussion for long enough, you know that we usually start with local markets and then we proceed to regional and then we proceed to, you know, global. But then really, I'm just going to be honest with you. If you're more a markets guy, I would definitely recommend the weekly markets update, Markets Monday, hosted by Felix. That's when you really get to discuss the nitty-gritties of what happened in markets. You get to discuss the numbers, you get to discuss the corporate actions. But today we want to start with regional today. It's a little bit of a surprise, I know, but regionally, I think 2 days ago we had a report that was detailing the different costs of starting a business, you know, across the world. And I just want to get to it and read you the different numbers. Spoiler alert, of course, Rwanda shines in Africa as usual, but then that's not something that you're really surprised now, are you? The report was curated by Baobab, and just looking at the map right here in front of me, what came out was the cost of starting a business in Kenya, it's around $352.93. Just comparing with the different neighbors, Somalia is around $900, Felix. Uganda is around $162. Ethiopia is $152.78. Burundi is, shocking enough, $30.37. Tanzania is $322.46, which is slightly below Kenya. And I think the lowest cost in Africa was, of course, Rwanda, because it's actually free to start small and medium enterprises in Rwanda for the first 2 years. So small businesses in Rwanda are exempted from fees for the first 2 years. And apart from Rwanda, another country that had quite a low fee was South Africa at $12.66. I think countries in Africa that had below $100 we had Tunisia at 92, and then we had Mauritania at $13.80, and then we had Sudan, shocking enough, $8.49, Egypt, $12.73. Imagine if you're in Egypt, you could the cost of, you know, starting a business, your registration and everything could be $12.73. Let me give you a context. Depending on where you live in Nairobi, that is slightly less than the cost of refilling your 6 kg gas. Yes.
Well, Ali, very important stats that we're getting, but looking at it from an entire range of the sub-Saharan continent, you know, mm-hmm. we are seeing that first of all, as much as Rwanda is free, we know that's for the first 2 years. You know, if we want to really create a viable economy, then one of the things that we have to look at is the tax environment.
Right.
And for our country, we know that that's slightly very hostile, mostly for startups. You know, you need to give guys incentives, mostly if you want the youth that don't have any capital yet. We think that apart from Rwanda, which is offering a free access to you investing, the only other country that has that incentive is Bolivia.
Right.
If I'm correct. And with that, you need to put an investment. The capital has to be at a minimum of 750 euros.
Mm-hmm.
It's Slovakia, not Bolivia.
Slovakia, yeah.
Yeah. That's giving guys, because I think Bolivia is also very expensive to start a business. One of the things that I'm personally wondering is why Equatorial Guinea has a high rate of starting business. It's one of the highest globally. It's even high. It's way expensive for you to start a business in Equatorial Guinea than for you to start a business in Chile, in Bolivia, in I don't know. There's a country that's called Suriname or Suriname in Ecuador, in Mexico. It's also very expensive for you to start a business, even in Denmark, in Iceland. So I think it's a challenge that you'd rather go to Norway, for example, to start a business than to have that up in Equatorial Guinea. Maybe my main concern really would be what level of return are investors getting from these investments that they do in various in the various sectors that they're investing in Equatorial Guinea, because as we're looking with the data that we have, probably it's only in the UAE that you need about $7,443 to start a business. After that, then the country that follows that is the country that's called, now the surname or surname, whichever name it is. I never heard of that country. I don't know where it is. After that, it's Equatorial Guinea. So what level of returns and what level of companies, what engagement from tech companies are we really seeing from Equatorial Guinea? Because even in TechSprung, the tech revolution in Africa, I haven't seen any companies from Equatorial Guinea. I don't know if you've seen any.
I am not currently aware.
Yes. So that level of the expense that we're seeing is slightly threatening. It's scary. Well, Kenya, I think, I'd say as much as we complain, but you think the average for Kenya is fairly standard. Maybe one of the things that really pushes Kenya up would be the taxes that come with it. There are no incentives to give startups one way to just spring up and jump start from the levels at which you are at. And I know that's a major challenge that we have in one way or another. At the same time, you know, look at it from this angle, Ali. It would cost you $77 for you to start, $725 to start a business in the US, $166 to start a business in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
It would cost you $379 to start a business in Australia. At the same time, it would cost you $350 to start one in Kenya. Now, the only other thing as well which came in interesting with these numbers was Ethiopia, which is almost half of what Kenya is offering. And also another company that we were also trying to look at, another country, sorry, which I think was very important as well to look at, was Somalia. I think Somalia is really, it's a country that has a lot of potential. There are a lot of things that I know is coming up with economic development in Somalia, and we'll definitely be looking into what is it that the country is likely to offer in coming years. Rwanda is really doing a good stuff. I think most countries maybe might want to, you know, one of the things that people usually say when it comes to business is, I won't say it's divide and rule, but it's really about you first capture and then you conquer.
Right.
You see, if you want to capture, if you want to do stuff like revenue, for example, tax revenue for countries, you know, these startups that are coming up, they'll definitely, once they grow, they'll definitely start paying taxes. Rwanda is giving guys a 2-year period so that you can be able to just do your business for free. You know, it's only your capital that is working within that period. Then after that period, what comes in next? Many a times we've seen a lot of investors and a lot of analysts say you cannot compare Kenya to Rwanda, because Rwanda, if you compare in terms of size, Rwanda is basically the size of maybe Kisumu, you know.
Right.
So look at it from that level. But if you're looking at GDP per capita, yes, I know Kenya currently still is way above Rwanda, but some incentives, and most of the times we usually say, Ali, in this show, that Rwanda is Africa's baby, where it's Africa's last one. If you want to tell donors and if you want to tell investors, this is our bad, this is our good side, you know who you give them? You tell
Rwanda,
them,
definitely.
This is Rwanda. Anytime they have any issue, everybody, even Africa, you know, for Africans as well, whenever there's a problem and we want to say, please, can you guys be able to perform better? What is it that we always do? We say, this is Rwanda. So that's one of the things as well that we are technically looking at. So I personally believe that Rwanda as a country really has a lot of potential, but still, it's still too early. I know for Kenya, even despite these taxes and guys complaining, at times we see various environments, mostly in terms of regulatory environment,
mm-hmm.
I'd say would really support a lot of tech, growth, and also in terms of skills, capacity, manpower. You know, those are things that we're definitely looking into and hoping that Kenya, I know Rwanda, I know Ali is smiling and you're like, but come on, Rwanda has more, probably they also have an equal capacity. But I think there's that one edge that we also have ahead of them, and we have to also acknowledge that.
Which is? Right. Exactly. That's what I thought. But then here's the thing, yeah? Felix, First of all, I'd like to give a disclaimer with regards to the data that we were talking about. The methodology of this data was, the information that we're giving is based on World Bank's Doing Business 2020 report. Which sort of looks like, looks at the minimum capital requirements, well, the cost and the paid in minimum capital requirements to start a small and medium-sized limited liability company to sort of operate in the largest business cities. So ideally in Kenya, we're looking at the cost of starting a small business in Nairobi. Felix, let's look at the blind spots here. In as much as we say, Kenya, this, Kenya, that, what's the cost of, you know, after you've registered, what's the cost of running that business for 1 year in terms of, you know, the little fees that you have to pay every month up to and including, you know, what some kanjo would come and, you know, collect from you every day?
Well, you know, Ali, I think, being honest, let's call a spade a spade.
Right.
Our environment is slightly hostile in terms of taxes for startups.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen a lot of stories out here where guys will come in because the usual tax for KRA, that's one thing that we know, the VAT, the corporate tax, those are in one way or another available. But now the challenge that we're facing over time would really come to a level of guys having a lot of levies that are in one way or another really pegged to you as an investor, really keeping up with your level of probably, the levels that really imply once again, just as taxes and levies that you need. A lot of guys say that these are licenses, you know, but the challenge would really be what is it that you need to do to run a business. And Ali, I know that's the second thing we're going to talk about, the affordability of running a business.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen stories where somebody would say, an example is somebody would say that for them to probably set up a farm, agriculture, which is the backbone of our economy, for you to start that up, you know what people would say?
What?
Guys would say they need to go to the Ministry of Agriculture. They need to get, and now we're seeing even if you have a potato farmer, you know, right now you need to be licensed. So if agriculture is the back of our economy, we want to tax the back. What it's like you're technically putting more weight onto your backbone, you know, because you think that you can be able to handle as much as you can. Maybe I think to some extent it might be a good, it might be seen as a good thing from the government perspective, because the government needs to generate as much revenue as they can. And just as I told you earlier on, our government is developing a habit of taxing utilities because they know that utilities and areas of basic need, these are areas that you're definitely going to pay, because an example is if they tax your airtime, you have to make a call, right?
Right.
If they tax your internet, that has become sort of a utility.
Uh-huh.
You have to be able to buy your bandwidth so that you can be able to pay. If they're taxing areas of agriculture, guys must eat. If they're taxing areas of that deal in real estate, environmental constructions and stuff like that, what is it that we're seeing here? The government is telling you that anything that you need to survive, they're going to tax it. And I think that's really a challenge. Earlier on, the government brought in incentives for cooking gas. That was way back in 2018, 2019. Right now, what are we seeing? The taxes are back again. And the government even wanted to tax bread.
Well, see, right. Felix. Felix, I feel like taxes are those.
Right.
Taxes.
We were looking onto affordability of starting a business.
Yes, and then we got ourselves here.
Yeah.
Thing is, I feel like Felix. Let's give ourselves the flowers that we deserve. In terms of, and when I say that, I mean we are doing comparatively better than some of our African peers, and just to mention a few in a second, we're doing better than, you know, well, I can't say Somalia, and of course I can't say Equatorial Guinea, that's an extreme, but like compared to, you know, just our immediate neighbors.
No, why can't you say Somalia?
Well, I can, but then like I feel like Somalia has not been the country that we would like to compare ourselves to, because we are already ahead of them in different metrics. So it sounds backward in the sense of, I like comparing Kenya to, you know, other sub-Saharan Africa powerhouses like Nigeria. So, and South Africa. So like, if we look at our neighbors, we might feel like we're doing all right. Although Ethiopia is clearly doing better than us. But then again, the cost of starting a business in Kenya might be low per World Bank standards. But then the cost of running that business in Kenya, oh, that's something else.
It's high.
That is something else. Especially during the time of coronavirus, where you're running a business online, you're using data, there's DST, there's minimum tax somewhere. I have words that I cannot say on air, but it is high.
Yeah.
Speaking of taxes, Felix, there's something that Mugambi Nandi on Twitter, yo, shout out, good content, brought it to my attention. It's on the Kenya Gazette Notice today. It's Friday, so yeah. And the matter at hand here is the income tax exemption for registered family trusts. It's in the Financial Act of 2021. Can you break this down for me?
Well, you know, first of all, Ali, I would want to say that I would let me get a little bit, though I know this show we don't get political.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when we're talking about family trust, we know the main culprit when it comes to family business.
Right.
Yes, they know themselves. I'm not going to mention a name.
Right.
But that's one thing, you know. So us looking at exempting family family trusts from tax.
Right.
I think
income tax.
Yeah, from income tax. I think that honestly is it's a major challenge. Mostly at this moment when the country is looking at avenues of taxing, one for raising tax and raising their general revenue, you know. It's also an incentive as well for probably families to come in one way or another and create the trust, which I know definitely that's an end goal. Once they do that, then the tax can come back in.
How many family trusts do we have in Kenya?
That's a number I think we need to check. But I think we have
very few. But they're treated like foundations, right?
Yeah.
So obviously they're exempt from trusts. But there's also the flip side whereby let's say you have your kid, you have your kid's education or insurance or something set up in a family trust. That's a good thing if they're exempt from tax, because then the money that you know is in that trust will actually not be taxed. So again, there's both ways to look at it, but I think we should start by looking at the numbers. How many family trusts do we have in the country, and what's the recent uptake? Then we can interrogate that further and see, you know, if it's really a big loss by the government, or if it's, you know, just quite negligible in terms of tax collections. But yeah, it's definitely interesting, and for me, that's one of the things that you always find out about the finance bill. Is you think you've seen everything, and then once it's signed, you
surprises.
Find there's still lots of surprises in there. So again, Felix, another chance to unpack the finance bill more and more, because I feel like there's still quite a lot of information in there that we haven't yet unpacked or looked at.
Well, because I'm just seeing that an example of the family trust would be the Kenyatta Trust Foundation, the Lions Charitable Trust, the Kalonzo Musyoka Foundation, Moi Foundation, Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. I know there are others like Mjenga Karume Family Trust. So, Ali, you know, it looks like corporates can now decide and get off from paying tax, because they're saying that they're doing their part by donating to a family trust. So an example here which is very important, I know we definitely have to relate to it.
Okay. No. Please do not. We know where you're headed to.
Yeah, but you guys have probably seen the tweet by Mugambi Nandi. Definitely. You can go read the comments. There's a very nice example there that has been given. you might want to read it out for yourself.
In case you haven't seen the act itself, I'm just going to read it to you. Well, in today's Gazette notice, it reads, the income tax is amended in section 11 by inserting the following new subsection immediately after subsection 3. Subsection 3A reads, in the case of a registered trust, subsection 3 shall only apply to any amount that is paid out of the trust income on behalf of any beneficiary and is used exclusively for the purpose of education, medical treatment, and early adulthood housing, which is what Eric was talking about. It also applies to income paid to any beneficiary, which is collectively below 10 million shillings a year. That's a lot of money. any amount, such amount as the commissioner may prescribe from time to time at the rate prescribed in paragraph 5 of the third schedule.
I think this is interesting, Adi.
You want to register business or family trust?
Technically. Okay, you know, if you want to register it as a family, maybe one of the things that we need to really have defined is who or what is a family. You know, yes, I know we have the dictionary definition, but we probably need to understand the constitutional definition because it's always coming in handy. You never know what has really been amended and what has really come into a change during such times whenever governments enact laws. We never really know which level of engagement that is really coming in one way or another.
Felix, away from family trusts, I know that usually we don't talk about the markets, but then there's something that happened that caught my attention and there's no way I'm leaving that out. Felix.
Mm-hmm.
Before I get there, what interests you in markets this week?
You know, there are a lot of stuff that have really been happening, both from a local and global standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
The first one that we know that a lot of guys have really been looking into has been the various changes in the various market trends on global space.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at it from a standpoint of mostly Chinese companies. My concern has really been on to the trends that Didi has been having. I know we've talked about Didi on from Monday all the way to Wednesday and today.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still really concerned about the trends that we're seeing one or another on Didi. Another thing that technically we have to look on today is there's news that Stripe has actually started a process of listing.
Wow, where?
And I think that would be a game changer if Stripe were to list, because Stripe is the largest payment service company in the US.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's largest in the world, but according to data, we still have a lot more really to come in. So looking at it in terms of if Stripe were to list,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what level of engagement or what level of change we can be able to see, and what I'm interested in the price of listing, you know. What price, the market capitalization, the data. When now the company goes public, we can now analyze it in setup. Like an example is when we analyze the revenue generation from M-Pesa for Safaricom. Then now we can start doing that for Stripe as well, you know?
Right.
That would definitely be an interesting bit.
Hold on, guys are saying
this. I know about Stripe, and I know that's definitely. Would want to say a word or two on Stripe. If Stripe were to list Jackson, yours.
Last time I called shorts on a stock, that was Coinbase. I don't know how it's performed since then. But Stripe is an interesting company because they're building the rails for payments across the globe. So think about, you know, just the payment companies. Again, payments is a huge space for multiple reasons, because remittances is still a huge issue. So, you know, trying to pay a merchant in abroad is still a big issue, both in Africa and globally. So Stripe looking at solving that problem at scale is obviously a huge, huge factor. And given that they are pro crypto, again, also goes a long way in just showing that they're actually a good company, in my opinion. Yeah, but let's wait and see the prospectus once they file because I think it's not confirmed yet on the plans. It was just some information based on a couple of hires that they made recently. So let's wait and see if there's a prospectus coming out, and then we can have a discussion around that.
I think when it comes to markets, this time I'm looking local. And something that caught my attention earlier today was that COP will be allowed to use 40% of accrued patients. Sorry. Cooperative bank customers will now be allowed to use up to 40% of their accrued pension benefits for residential house purchase, as long as the sum does not sort of exceed 7 million shillings, which kind of gives banks' exposure to real estate. I don't know what you have to say about that, Felix. And then also, I think locally, well, beyond markets, well, there's a BRT contract, but that we're going to talk about later.
Oh my God, I wish we could start with the BRT contract before we touch on COP.
It doesn't have anything to do to Uganda, so I don't know why you're excited.
No, like, come on, we've seen Tanzania implement BRT. The challenge with our BRT system is, you know, first of all, is we're seeing that another company is going to be able to make the payments.
Mm-hmm.
Another company will be able to manage the BRT system for the next 12 years.
Right.
And my concern really is it a Chinese company? You know, so that's one thing that we're really looking into. Is it a Chinese company? That is my primary concern.
I think I have multiple questions with regards to our BRT system. On the positive edge, I'm excited that we're making steps, really. I'm tired of seeing that red line on thicker road that doesn't really materialize to anything. So happier that we're making steps. I am curious about how this would specifically reduce traffic, especially on the road. Given that, you know, some other initiatives by the state to sort of work with either state corporations like NYS to reduce traffic have not necessarily been, you know, accepted in such a positive light, especially by other stakeholders in the transport industry. And in case you haven't caught up with what I'm talking about here, I am talking about the matatu sector. So we've had wrangles on the road with players in the matatu sector sort of picketing against NYS buses, complaining that they're charging fares that are below market, which could potentially threaten their business. So I do not know how or what the BRT buses will charge. Felix, do you have any information with regards
69.
To that? What? That's a weird number, but okay.
Yeah, I honestly think it's a weird number.
That's what they charge for real.
Yeah, but maybe they can charge, because, you know, they really have to, it also has to be, anyway, you know, Ali, you'd rather pay for convenience, even if they're charging 150,
mm-hmm.
you'd rather pay for that convenience rather than you sitting in traffic for about 1 or 2 hours. If you know that if you're coming from, let's say, for example, you're coming from Githurai and you're getting to town, you know, in the next 20 minutes you're in town, I think that gives you as well time for planning. So
right.
Really, I think one way or another, that would be a positive edge. But still, my concern would really be, as much as it's a public-private partnership,
mm-hmm.
That the government is doing with whichever company it is, hoping it's not a Chinese company, but at the back of my mind, I'm like, I know, this must be a Chinese company.
Mm.
Whichever company it really is, my main concern is always about, as much as we know that they'll be able to give, they'll be in one way or another obliged to get back their investments.
Mm-hmm.
But also look at it from the angle of how many companies are going to benefit. Is it only in what way is the government going to benefit in terms of revenue? So that really is my major concern. But overall, I think it's a good thing.
You know what? I'm kind of positive about the BRT. As long as I'm not entirely comfortable with the fact that, you know, in Kenya, well, in the case of the BRT, we didn't necessarily have details about the tender being necessarily public to the people, which I think is a problem. You know, what happened is Felix Tulikaivi, and then we were surprised, like, oh, hi guys, so we have a company that is working with us on this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's that tendering process, which, by the way, let me speak freely here, is an issue we have across the board.
I'm not part of that work.
Felix, procurement processes by the government.
It's flawed from the top.
Oh, flawed. Trust me, flawed is a loaded word. It's obscure. And it does not follow the basic tenets of, you know, competitive threats. Neither does it follow, you know, simple rules like conflict of interest or transparency.
Yeah.
But then, hey, I'm a dreamer. Away from that, in as much as I have concerns, you know, with specifically surrounding, you know, the process behind it, I really hope that A, it's going to help with the traffic. B, we'll actually have accurate statistics with regards to the time value of money when it comes to, you know, delays in goods getting to where they're supposed to be and people getting to where they're supposed to be on time, and how much that is costing us as a country and what we need to do.
Interesting data. I'm really hoping to get the data as well. When you have it, please share it with all of us.
I will. That's gonna make for an interesting story. What else has happened in markets that doesn't necessarily eat into what you're going to discuss on Monday?
Well, I know, Ali, you've talked about Cooperative Bank really issuing the pension for mortgage product. So really, what's happening is Cooperative Bank is partnering with Envel Financial Services to give guys an opportunity to buy a home, buy a house using their pension. You know, Envel as a retirement benefit scheme has, not us. Envel is a company that offers mostly retirement savings plans, you know, and financial services. So what COP is now telling guys is, when you're about to retire, you can actually tell Envel to buy your house using your
retirement monies,
your retirement fund. And I know a lot of companies out there using Envel as a pension for their employees. And also a lot of guys are actually saving on their personal retirement plan by Envel. And by the way, guys, one of the things that I would encourage from a financial expert perspective is that you can always try and plan to have your personal pension plan if you can. Because here's the honest truth, NSSF won't be able to support you for long, and it takes long for you to claim that money. So that's one challenge. But Envel on the other side, those are, and not only Envel, there are a lot of other areas that you can be able to really look at and just invest in and save for your pension. Most of the insurance companies as well offer the same. Companies like Britam, Jubilee, I know CIC. So you can always be able to just reach out, check out which one is best prepared for you, and you can definitely be able to pick it up and just throw it in. So I think that's one thing. So what Coop Bank is now doing is, earlier on with the finance bill of 2020, they were actually allowed, there was an act that now allowed guys to buy to secure mortgage using their pension. So that's what Coop Bank is really doing here for investors. For investors who are investing in their pension funds. So that's one thing as well that we're really looking into. So for me as an investor, and for you out there, these are various products at which you can be able to look into. I don't think this will really have any level of impact on the share price for Cooperative Bank. Because Coop Bank, I think, Ali, you know, Coop Bank is technically the majority shareholders of Cooperative Bank are mainly cooperative societies and circles, you know. That's why it's called the Kingdom Bank. The Kingdom Bank is now Jamii Bora, but Coop Bank for a very long time has usually branded itself as the Kingdom Bank. So Ali, one of the ways I'm looking at this, it's for long term, I don't think it will have any negative exposure, because, you know, whatever it is that you're getting, if it's in terms of a house, a mortgage, all of it is really secured. Mm-hmm. Unlike the various products that we've seen that mostly guys are told to probably not mortgage, but to guys at all to get into real estate properties and secure.
Felix, I think there's a lot that I'd want you to. Sorry, there's a lot that I'd want you to unpack. When it comes to, you know, other developments happening in the market, and something that maybe I'd want you to highlight on. I know you're definitely planning to get into detail on it with regards to what is it called, Kenyari, and with Kenyari, and as also we can also talk about sort of what's happening within the commodities sector, specifically around tea. I think in tea and coffee, when it comes to tea, we had, I think the imports to Pakistan rose by 11.4%.
Well, so Ali, just starting off with the markets, and for guys who are wondering, is a very interesting thing that has come out today from the Nairobi Securities Exchange. For the first time, Ali, today, the NSE has shared with investors the unquoted securities market. So there's the unquoted securities price list, which has come out. You know, the NSE launched the unquoted securities platform earlier this year, and Appen Group was the first one to list. And today we're seeing they've actually traded about 20 million. Jesus.
You know, you have to break that down for me, right? You're the markets guy here.
Okay, so really, we're just seeing, you see, when a company lists, the company gets quoted on the market.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a platform that NSE is now giving guys to really, if you can trade on companies that are unlisted, you see, as long as they have their shares availed on the market. So that's what the unquoted security system is all about. And the NSE is giving guys an opportunity. So companies like Akon, which one do you prefer?
Akon, whatever. Potato, potato.
Tomato, tomato. So Akon Group listed, it's the only company that's currently listed on the USP. It's not listed, it's quoted on the US. No, it's not quoted, it's listed. Yeah, Jesus, technical terms. So yes, we're seeing today the NSE has released the price list for the USP, and we've seen, no, this is the weekly price list, and during the week, the Akon D-Rate traded a few units. It's traded about 300 million units,
mm-hmm,
at a flat price of 20 shillings, so that's a general rate of 20 million that have been traded on the market. So that's one thing as well that's coming in handy. Now, for Kenyari, which you also mentioned, Ali, one of the things that we're seeing with Kenyari Insurance is the changes in the board, which I know a lot of guys have probably heard of this since morning. We're seeing here for Kenyari, where Jennifer Karima has been picked, has been voted as to represent the board at level of chairperson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would like to say chairman to the board, because because I'm seeing in the notices that none of them really has said it's a chairperson. But you know, Ali, some of these acts and some of the statements that we see, it's also because the company is yet to change the laws,
mm-hmm,
the articles of association, to really indicate that the chairman, the post of chairman can be the word chairman should be changed to chairperson, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I know that's one of the challenges. So Jenny is coming in as the chairperson. That was effective yesterday. So somebody had this inside information yesterday, so that we would have this today. But all in all, I'm not saying that now that was inside information. Definitely, probably somebody knew this, but they didn't act on it. So hold your horses before you call shots onto that pit. So Jenny has, I'll just read the statement that Kenyari has issued. Jenny has a career spanning about 40 years in corporate leadership, and she's a psychologist, a certified professional coach, energy leadership practitioner. Okay, I'm really seeing nothing here that relates with insurance, to be precise and honest. But I think Jenny has the skills really to lead a board. nothing insurance related in her portfolio. But I'm really thinking, I honestly don't know. I have gone through the statement that they have issued, apart from the bit that, I don't know. You can be able to.
You're struggling. Una struggle.
No, I have tried to go through the statement that they issued to just see. But also the bit that comes in is her skills, and she's a learned woman. She deserves that. So that's one thing. She has a Master's of Arts degree from Durham University in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And currently she's pursuing a PhD in Educational Psychology. She's attended leadership professional courses from various institutes, including Harvard, Singapore Institute of Management, Strathmore Business School. So I think Strathmore Business School of Blackbeard, at least there's a bit of business school in that. So definitely, I think these are good things for her. Her leadership skills are really a mess. I think her leadership skills are peak, in my opinion, and I think she's going to deliver to the board for Kenyery. So she comes in to replace Chiboli, who's been at the helm of Kenyery for about, I think, 8 years.
Right.
Yeah, so it's definitely time for a change for Kenyery. So we're really hoping that she'll continue with the work that Kenyery has really... that Chiboli has been delivering to Kenyery Insurance Corporation.
Felix, there are two issues that I'd like us to look at.
Yes.
One of them is of course locally, and the other one is globally. And fair warning, this is kind of political, and it relates to state corporations.
I'm talking to politics.
I know earlier we discussed. Earlier, we discussed some of the requirements by the IMF with regards to the different loans that they're planning to give us. And this week, we saw the National Treasury releasing a statement. And the statement essentially was saying that the National Treasury knows what's happening when it comes to, you know, the rot in state corporations, and it is going to, quote-unquote, apply a staged approach to state corporation reform strategy in the coming months to strengthen the legal framework, to improve performance monitoring, to enhance controls and transparency, and to bolster the relationship between state corporations and national government. And with regards to the IMF support, the statement signed by Attorney said the evaluation of state corporations was initiated by the government in response to the existing structural issues in the financial performance of state corporations, which were further deepened by the COVID-19 pandemic. It has been carried out with the technical support of the International Monetary Foundation, that's the IMF, and is part of the 38th month program between Kenya and the IMF. Felix, let's be candid. If today you're given the power to root out some of the state corporations, which one would you keep and which one would you throw out of the proverbial window?
I think there's a lot of ways in which we can be able to look at various state corporations locally. One of the various companies that I think we can be able to really figure out how to move around with them and to just, I don't know if I should say merge them, but I'm really wondering why we have four or five companies or four or five regulators, state corporations that are acting as regulators in their own way, Ali.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, not to be personal or not to be a Kenyan, but I'd really look onto the companies that are there on the tax when you're paying your electricity bill. You know, I think you can reduce those companies to as much as possible. That's the first thing.
Really? And then, mention a few. Come on.
Ali, come on. Why not merge Kenjin and Ketraco? You know?
What, and your rationale for that would be?
Because I think that if Kenjin and Ketraco are merged, right now, Ketraco already has the capacity to transmit electricity, or make one a subsidiary of the other. It doesn't really have to be to a level of having the two of them as different entities, paying bills and taxes to different entities as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's in my opinion is one thing that I think we can be able to work with. And then why do we have the water and then water the WAMA, like Water and Something Resource Management, you know, but we also have NEMA. They're all towards against environmental management, you know. So why not merge the two of them? Ali, these are things that I'm just trying to look at and figuring out ways in which we can be able to work through. But anyway, I know what I'm mentioning, some of them are very small. They were not mentioned in the various reports for IMF.
Right.
But the state corporation that are making losses that I think we really need to figure out how to work through is companies like KPLC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, KPLC, in my opinion, I really think Kenya Power is one of those companies that have a very huge fundamental gap that they're not really getting to handle. My concern really would be, to what engagement can we have to ensure that Kenya Power as a company really gets to deliver? KPLC just needs a good tax audit, you know, and good revenue collections. I think with that we can be able to deliver. These are utility, come on. It's like your airtime that you use. Why is Safaricom making more money than Kenya Power is? Well, and also probably government should start paying debts they owe to KPLC, man. Nairobi County government alone owes KPLC quite a close to 5 billion. How many other counties out here owe Kenya Power? So usually, even as much as we hit on KPLC, let's be honest and tell guys the truth. The government is not, most of these government institutions are not paying KPLC because they know that Kenya Power has to, one way or another, really deliver that power to them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, there are a lot of ways in which I look at it. I won't get into the nitty gritties. But I think that's just an angle I'm looking at it from.
I think, I don't know. This is a conversation that I'd gladly have maybe on other segments of the podcast, specifically the Thought Leader interviews with regards to the reforms that we need when it comes to state corporations. And, you know, when you talk about unpaid bills, water.
Water, Jesus. Yeah. I think there's a lot of areas in which you have to look into. Maybe also another thing that I'm personally looking at time to time is the overall engagement from state corporations. You know, and one of the things that is really killing us to some extent is also when we talk about IMF conditions. One of the things that is also really killing us is a huge wage bill, the recurrent expenditure. Close to 70% of what we collect is going on recurrent expenditure.
Yeah, but Felix,
for a government, that's risky.
Felix.
It's like Ali, you're working and 70% of your salary
is going to the landlord and food.
No, that's just the landlord.
Felix.
By the time you're eating, you're going to ensure and borrow. The cycle continues, but it's a very risky one.
In the spirit of Kenyans on Twitter, what is something that you would maybe suggest for? What is something that you'd suggest for? How should I put this? For cutting the recurrent expenditure, given that the other alternative is, you know, the private sector absorbs more people, which it really isn't doing well, because. Because the cost of doing business is high, and businesses aren't making money, so they can't employ enough people. This is what was Serikali. Where should they go?
I think the government should work on creating a tax, probably more tax incentives to startups in the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
We can't continue taxing the private sector 100%. We can't continue taxing the private sector. Like it's the next big thing, you see, for the government.
Mm-hmm.
We need to give these guys incentives. We've seen a lot of layoffs. We're seeing a lot of mugging that's going on in Nairobi, where you can no longer use your phone. If you're using your phone, the next thing you're seeing is, you know, the next thing you're seeing in your eyes is that Ugali Man video. So we can't really have that continue to happen over time.
Mm-hmm.
My concern really would be onto the levels of just how many guys and how many investors. How many companies can really take up that level of taxing? You know, our companies are right now telling guys companies can't even be able to give guys salary raise because they know that you give this guy and the government is going to come for you for taxes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to move you in the next tax bracket.
Yeah, so.
Right. But then, Felix, something else that I'd away from, you know what? Something happier. Was it earlier today? Yes, earlier today. And this is an interesting headline. You, rich nations should put $30 billion of IMF cash towards Africa investments. You have to hear this, yo. This was a request by African ministers. And hold on. It was an open letter to leaders in the G20 and finance ministers from Ghana, DRC, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, was talking to rich nations, and what they were saying was, you guys, increase the support for proper COVID-19 vaccination. Oh, on COVID-19 vaccination, by the way, Pfizer is lobbying for a second dose. It's saying that, you know what, the first vaccine dose isn't really, really doing much. Cases are still increasing, so guys might need, a second dose. I have to read that correct for you. Well, I will do that in a bit. Pfizer was seeking for a booster shot for, especially for the Delta variant. You know what that does? All the hopes that we had on vaccination kind of drew us back, because Pfizer is the one that has a single dose, right? AstraZeneca and AstraZeneca had two doses.
Yeah. Also, even JJ is also too. That's Johnson & Johnson. Yeah. Also getting that too. But Ali, now let me cut you short and just go back to your story about
IMF.
Yeah. No, both Africans requesting rich nations.
African rich ministers.
African ministers. You know, I think, I don't know, but maybe to our listeners, and maybe to guys who are listening, if you go to HISA app today, I'm going to start a chat just to mention which countries are rich. I'm personally wondering which country is rich, which country is not having their issues one way or another. So there are a lot of ways in which I'm just trying to look at this from and just wondering, because one of the challenges that we've really had over time is countries really having, Ali, why must we always be seen as a level of aid, you know?
I really want to talk about the cost of aid, but that's a very, very, very political conversation, and I don't want to have that in this forum, at least not this moment. In case maybe you're not as updated with regards to the IMF conversation, the IMF is implementing a $650 billion allocation, which is, I think it's the largest ever in its reserve currency, called the special drawing rights. And in the SDR is going to be made available very, very soon. And part of the initiatives in the disbursement is to sort of prevent, quote unquote, it's to forestall the current emerging market liquidity crisis devolving into an insolvency crisis.
Come on, Ali. How many African countries really have a stable access or a stable revenue collection system or a stable reporting system that they can be able to collect to really account for every single penny that they get from donors? How many? If you give me that number, I'll really be able to support you and tell you Africans were right. African ministers were right to ask for that support from G20.
I don't have a problem with that, asking for that support. See,
no, do you have the statistics of how many? We know that we lose 2 billion daily. Have you received your 2 billion today? I haven't.
No, thing is, and that's what I was trying to talk about. As we close on Felix, I feel like maybe we do need some support from the IMF. Given the terms in which IMF gives us finances compared to other lenders, and if you're in Kenya, we're talking about, you know, China. But
come on, better IMF gives you better rates, first of all. Yeah, and like the other multilateral lenders are facing here. But then, specific, these guys are charging us arm and leg. You know, we can't be borrowing and paying guys at a rate of 10% or at a rate of 7% again, while IMF would give us a loan for 1%. Who doesn't want 1% or 0.something?
My question would be then, why are we opting for them instead of the IMF?
Because they have less strict rules than IMF, and we all love easy stuff. Easy come, easy go. Yeah.
So easy, expensive.
Yeah. Easy and expensive. So there are a lot of ways in which we can be able to look at this from.
Maybe just to sort of close the podcast, Felix. I'm just going to give you a markets roundup. Sorry, we've gotten a little bit political today. Not really.
IMF got us political. We are not political. We're just talking about IMF, and these are stuff that are here day to day.
Right. Maybe just to give you some of the data in what's happening in both local and, well, I wouldn't say global markets, because I usually just do a roundup for cryptocurrency. Well, what's happening in local and crypto markets? Today, we saw, I think, when it comes to movers on the local stock exchange, Umeme came up top, Umeme Limited. The share price rose by 6.20%. So it opened at 5.48 and closed at 5.82. And then, of course, we have Standard Group Limited, which rose by 5.88%, opening at 17 shillings, closing at 18 shillings. And then we had CIC. Shockingly enough, CIC opened at 3 shillings 10 cents and closed at 3 shillings 27 cents. Felix, interesting enough, shares traded on CIC were 1.5 million. So we had 1.5 million shares that were traded on the new.
Well, very interestingly, I'm also just checking on the loser side, checking through the Hisa app, and I'm seeing Crown was down again. Jesus, I don't know what level Crown is going to, but it's down again 9.93%. You can catch me on Markets Monday. We'll be able to talk about a little bit more of why Crown is possibly coming down. Kakuzi was down as well, 7.9% to trade at 372 shillings and 75 cents. At the same time, Umeme Limited down as well, 5.15% to 5 shillings and 52 cents. Bank of Kigali, which has really been a good one for the banks, has been one of the leading stock in terms of returns on the Nairobi Securities Exchange, was down as well 3.7%, and that's about 26 shillings. So yeah, that's it. On the mover side, we saw Safaricom, Equity and Absa really come in as the top three companies that were moving the markets. Safcom, as usual, 4.15 million shares traded. Equity, 3.4 million shares traded. And Absa, 2.96 million shares traded.
Yeah, I think maybe I can just mention a few cryptocurrencies and how they are and how they've performed well up to right now. Cross your fingers. Oh, today we're green. So BTC green, I think in the past 24 hours it gained 2.23%, currently trading at $33,603. Ethereum is green, gaining 0.46%, trading at $2,174. XRP is green, gaining 2.25% in the past 24 hours, currently trading at $0.64.
Cardano is green.
I know. Yeah. Well, Cardano is green, as he said. It was up by 0.03%.
And Dogecoin is going to the moon.
Depending on how far you think the moon is, it's currently trading at $0.22. I think I should mention these figures in cents, just to sort of kill the hope in you. But yeah, most cryptocurrencies are green today, except maybe Chainlink, Filecoin.
Let me just cut you a little bit on Dogecoin.
Sure.
Literally, Dogecoin is going to the moon next year, literally. Not in terms of share price, but in terms of a Dogecoin-backed, whatever. Is it a rocket that Elon is working on or some satellite? Dogecoin-funded. So guys have to fund that with their Dogecoin. It's literally going to the moon next year. In 2022, there's a launch for the moon, and Tesla will be taking guys to the moon. So we're really hoping that you'll be able to land your Dogecoin there. For Tesla, Ali, I know we already have the Tesla Roadster, which is somewhere past Mars right now in the cosmic belt. So yes, we're hoping that the real share prices would also go beyond that. Yeah.
I think this is all we had for today.
Yeah, all we have for today, guys. Maybe just one more minute to give the guys on Twitter, and the guys on Telegram, if you want to comment or have a question, there's a feature where you just raise your hand. So just like class, so you can raise your hand and just add a comment. I'm seeing a lot of you have been with us since we started. Gabriel, you've been with us for some time since we started, and thanks a lot for being in. And I know that's one thing as well that we definitely look into. Any person on Telegram? I'm seeing Telegram, there's none. On Twitter, on the other hand, let me see. Twitter, there's none as well. So that's it, guys. It's a wrap.
Well, see you next week. As usual, hey, Monday, catch us on Markets. Well, catch Felix and sometimes me on Markets Monday. Case you're an NSC enthusiast, well, Markets enthusiast. Wednesday, we have Bold Spares and Markets. Quite interesting discussion. And then, of course, Friday, we are curious. In between the week, there are a couple of podcasts flowing out. We did a podcast with the Africa Venture Capitalist Association, in case you're interested in how funding is flowing around startups. We did another podcast with a VC called Vital Impact, in case you want to understand how venture capitalists sort of balance sustainable investment and, you know, just business sound decisions. And we had other interesting discussions with a program called Digitally, which works with cyber cafes, specifically furthering asset finance to cyber cafes and enabling them to expand their businesses, as well as sort of hook them up with more opportunities with corporates. That's all we had for today. My name is Ali Mokaneno. I was your host, and I was with
Felix Ochieng, guys. Bye-bye. See you guys again next week, same time.